You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
I say, like, this is another thing that goes back to, like, reincarnation. There's something, the art gods pick people. I was on this path. There's nothing you could do to stop it because, like, this cloud that I used to live under, like this, the way I used to think, and, like, I didn't, you know, like I was just so unbelievably selfish all the time. And that helped my career. Like, I mean, that was like, you know, I'm going to do this. I'm going to get this for me. Like, I don't give a shit about anybody else. I'm going to fucking, you know, I'm going to make it, you know? And that drive, who knows where that came from. It was just like, it's like some, like I say, something supernatural. Is like, you know, this guy's, you're going to do this. And now I look back, I'm like, how did I freaking do that? Why did I do that? Why, how could I be such an asshole?
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hops heads? I'm Matt, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, brought to you by Sound Talent Media and Evergreen Podcasts, where I sit down with fellow metal musicians, talk all about their lives and music while sharing killer craft beers. This Vox and Hops episode is presented by Heavy Montreal. Heavy Montreal are Montreal's premier metal promoter. And trust me when I say, if you are ever in Montreal and you are looking for a show to go to, well, Heavy Montreal will have you covered. They put on so many shows all year long, and they are all simply bangers. I am beyond stoked to have Heavy Montreal behind the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. Now, before we jump into today's episode, I'd just like to ask you to follow the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast on the podcast platform of your choice. But more than that, I would love for you to tell a friend about the podcast. If there's someone in your life that just loves extreme metal, well, let them know that the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast exists. You can tell them that there are over 400 episodes where I sit down with some of the world's best metal musicians. We talk all about their lives and music while sharing killer craft beers. If you're to encourage one of your metalhead friends to become a brand new Vox and Hops head, that would be something that I would truly appreciate. Now, today on the podcast, I'm very stoked to be with Tommy Victor of Prong. Get ready, everyone. This is Vox and Hops episode number 427.
I warn you, what you are about to hear is very disturbing indeed.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Today, I'm very stoked to be with Tommy Victor of Prong. He also plays in Danzig, has been doing that since 2004. Tommy, you're another legend on Vox and Hops. I think it's super cool to hang out with people that do what they love and have been doing it for multiple decades. I think that's fucking awesome. I'm approaching my second decade with Cryptopsy, so, you know, I'll eventually get there as long as we keep blasting. Tommy, how you doing?
Congratulations. You look so young. I mean, you look... like a little baby.
It's the beer. It's the beer. I'm 40 this year, Tommy.
You look 25.
It's the beer. I'm just pickled. It's well preserved.
Yeah, I used to be pickled, and now I have to face life as it is, so that it makes you more in pain all the time. So that leads to wrinkles and other stress flabs. When you're drinking, you're probably having a good time. You don't feel all that. Well, the anxiety as much, I guess. So you're a good example of that.
The weight of life.
I'm a glutton for punishment. That's why I'm sober and drinking peppermint tea, and I'm completely straight edge because I don't even have caffeine. I'm like, you know.
Wow. This is Vox and Hops. Vox and Hops. Typically, I hang out with my metal friends. We talk about their lives and music while sharing craft beers. But this is a sober episode. You're drinking peppermint tea, no caffeine.
But you know, recently I did try, not to interrupt you, but. I had a non-alcoholic Guinness recently.
Yeah.
And I loved it. Guinness is the only beer that, what's that, if you want to call it, but you guys are aficionados, you would say stout or whatever. Or, yeah, it's, but that's the only thing I miss, really.
A good Guinness, a
Guinness,
stout.
Yeah.
It's hard to find non-alcoholic stouts. They sort of all suck, honestly.
I thought that the Guinness was great, man.
Yeah, I'll have to try it. Yeah.
Yeah. As long as it's cold. It's really good, yeah.
On my side, I'm going to be drinking a little collab that I did with Pitch Black North, the Satanic Tea Company out of Calgary. This is the Cryptopsy Pitch Black North collab. None So Vile, a play on our classic album, None So Vile. It's black tea with lavender. And of course, if I'm involved in it, it's got some hops in it. We also made a beer with the tea in it. But tonight we're talking about the tea. Cheers to Dominic, the Satanic Tea Lord himself, for making this happen.
That's fantastic. That is really cool. I'm really intrigued by that. And a nice cup, too.
Hell yes. Always the proper glassware. Take Me to Sobriety. Let's dig straight into that. As we were setting this up, John Freeman, Freeman Promotions, is who made this all happen. We set it all up months ago, and then he writes me about a week out, and he goes, oh, by the way, Tommy's sober. Is that a problem? And of course, it's not a problem. I respect my guests. I can hang out with sober people. We can talk about sobriety if my guests are open about that. So Tom, Take Me to opening up to the punishment, facing life in a raw form, embracing the wrinkles, as you mentioned. Talk to me about turning the page and no longer partaking in drugs or alcohol.
Well, it was a long battle for a long time. I mean, I worked at a bar. I mean, that's really where Prong came out of. I was working at CBG, yeah. So, and that was in the 80s. So, there was tons of coke, speed. I had like pharmaceutical speed. And I could drink as much as I want after hours. So, you know, we were going crazy. You know, and then, you know, when Prong started, it got to the point where I wasn't even interested in playing anymore. It was like I couldn't wait to get off stage and and drink. And then so it became too much of a priority for me. That's just my personality. It became too much of a religion. So I've been in and out. Like, so I stopped for a while, and then I went back, and then like 10 years ago, I'm on this 10-year sobriety run this time. I've had other signs. So 10 years ago, I don't know, it was the weirdest thing in the world. Like, I just had a one of these crappy, like, pop-off vodka, like a half pint in plastic. And I was at the rehearsal studio with Prong, and I looked at it, and I'm like, man, first of all, this tastes awful. It's horrible. I'm like, I just said, I can't anymore. I didn't start again. So that was it, really. I mean, it's just one of those things. It just felt it was interfering with me because I was, you know, it was too much of a priority. Like, especially in L.A., like, this is like before Uber got big, too. I was always worried about how the fuck am I going to get home?
So dangerous. Like,
right. You know, it's like calling a cab. I was like trying to figure out public transportation and all this shit. It's like, where am I going to live? I got to live near bars and walking distance. It's like, wow. I was like a Hasidic Jew or something. I had to be near the synagogue, but it was like bars. So it became like a religion, you know? So,
I completely understand.
But I love I do, especially you guys with beers. I love beer. That was my main thing. But again, like, then moved to vodka, whiskey, anything really made it too much. I bloated, just horrible hangovers, and, you know, but I was functioning, you know. I made records and did stuff, you know, so. But now, I just completely cut everything out. Now, we were talking earlier, I have seems like having kids is my new thing now. It's like, so I have my old age, we have two young kids, and now I just don't sleep anymore. So I'm just like, I can't work out or do anything positive anyhow. So I'm always just like punishing myself. Life is penance in a way, I think. It is. It really is. It's sometimes I really wonder if we're reincarnated, that we picked our parents. You know, there was some kind of, we had a list. Yeah, we were like, we're in another dimension. And then, you know, as from our past lives and died that way. And like, what are we going to do to make up for that? And we just put ourselves in this other realm in order to, make up for whatever we need to learn or something. Because like, I noticed that with kids, it's like, why did some kids, like, they come out and they're like brilliant geniuses right off the bat. And other kids, like, you know, have, you know, speech delays or, you know, other difficulties, you know, like, I was wondering, you know, is it just a happen chance, or is it, you know, whatever. So I don't know why it's like that. Some kids are born with these abilities, you know, so.
That's a big debate right there, for sure.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know what I'm talking about, but whatever.
No, I like it. No, I do like it. You mentioned something that I want to go back to, though, is wanting to finish a show in order to drink. So that meant you wouldn't drink before the show.
No, I would drink before the show. I just wanted more. I had a problem too. It's like one time, this is the first prom, and we were playing like a straight edge place. Damn, I can't remember. It's in Connecticut. And they're like, no, you know, there's no alcohol served. But so we're like, okay, fine. The only thing that they served was Jolt Cola. And this is before Red Bulls, et cetera. And it was this horrible cola that had like three times the amount of caffeine. And we said, well, fuck it. We're just going to do something else. And we drank like a case of this horrible soda. And we played so awful. We couldn't even play. It was so bad. So, I mean, anything that you do in excess is going to like be, is not going to be that great. So we did have shows and we would experiment of drinking a lot before going on, and that never worked. That was always horrible. So sometimes a little shot here and there helps. But then I was like, you know what? Why am I being a pussy? Especially like we're playing guitar with Danzig, which is the whole thing in itself. It's like, why? I'm not going to have a drink to calm my nerves, to do anything. It's just, I got to face this completely head on the way I am, you know, like if I was intended to be stressed out, intended to be nervous, and intended to be, if I'm naturally that way, that's the way I should face it. I'm not going to do anything else to change that, you know. And if I play absolutely horribly, which is always a potential,
wow,
then that's the way it's supposed to be. You know, it's like, I'm always fearful of playing like shit or underperforming or, you know, the things that everyone's afraid of, humiliation. And I'm not saying that this method helps that at all. Probably drinking helps a lot of these things, like helps you overcome that in a way.
The nerves, for sure. The just loosens you up a little bit, because nerves, that anxiety of performance definitely impacts the performance.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the old-time baseball players and hockey players would probably drink a bunch before they went on the rink or skated.
They definitely fell a lot looser. Because there's stories of that, people that like fall off buildings when they're really inebriated, and then they don't break bones because they don't get all rigid, you know? Not that I'm recommending people try. Don't do that, people.
I just realized that, yeah, but I think I have a penance to serve, and, you know, so that I must walk through life without any help from anything. So
no coffee. When did that come at the same time as the sobriety?
I've been in and out of coffee and caffeine. So, you know, that's right now I'm not.
Okay.
My anxiety level gets too high.
Interesting. Talk to me about your first beer. Bring me back to that. I love to ask that question. Do you remember the very first beer you had?
Well, I think it was from my dad. I mean, like that, I had to be, what, 6 or 7? Wow, I mean, I didn't have a whole beer, but he'd be like, yeah, try, you know, take it. I don't know if you ever heard of this beer. You definitely didn't, because you're not from New York, but there's this beer, and no one from in recent years has heard of it. It was called Fox's, and it was Foxhead. And it was just a cheapo beer. And my father would get that. Like, but back in the day, and we're talking like the 60s, and like Bud was the king of beers. Oh, we can't, that's way too expensive. Bud, like, what are you kidding me? This is before imports. So there was like a level of beers. Like, I'd ask my father, I go, yeah, it's like, and I was like, oh, your mother could, you were on a budget, she's only going to get Foxhead, which is like this shit. It's like, it's almost like this, like a Walmart beer or something. So, yeah, it was like this crappy beer. So he would then, but when on a big occasion, he would have a Pabst Blue Ribbon, because that was right below Bud. So he like, you know, I'd try that. So, but when I really first started getting drinking, because I, you know, growing up in Queens, there was a big pressure. I grew up in an Irish-Italian neighborhood. And there was, as soon as you get 12, I got kidding with this guy around the corner from me. He's like, were you going to go out drinking with us? And I was like, what, drinking, really? I was like, yeah, well, you know, we go out, we go to this, you know. I was like 12. I was in seventh grade.
Wow.
So, yeah, and we were like, we go out, and somebody buys us beers. and we just drink on the street. Like, it's like fucking 12 degrees out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're drinking on the street, and it's like, yeah, I was cool.
Yeah.
You know, like, I was out with the local idiots in a schoolyard drinking beer. And I remember that that beer was usually Schaefer, which was the beer that we had back then, which was another local New York beer brewed in Brooklyn that no longer exists. And I don't remember it being that bad, really. My father hated it. He's like, Schaefer's garbage, he used to say.
How about that first tour back, either with Prong or with Danzig, when you were sober? Because there's a lot of rituals that go into shows, and then when that part of that ritual is not there, sometimes there's that superstition of, am I still going to be able to perform? Connections with people that you've met on the road over so many years that know you, identify with you as a person that likes to drink. Take me through that first tour.
It was pretty easy because I think people didn't like to drink with me anyhow. And you know, people usually don't like to hang out with me in any case, regardless. So it was like, they didn't give a shit. So, and as far as the rituals go, like, it's what Glenn is kind of, you know, I mean, yeah, he's not as much as a health nut as he was. I mean, he's not really into drinking that much. So, and especially before a show, he'll drink and party like with chicks and shit later or whatever. These days, older women. But it's like, you know, but it's like he would, he's not. So what he liked to do is do a shot of ginseng before we went on.
Interesting.
And then I even cut that out because I was like, that's a stimulant, you know, so I wasn't into doing that. And when he'd be like, oh, okay. But yeah, no one really gives a shit. You know, like, I know with me, I never really felt that anybody was like, you know, that anybody was taken back. And like, I never really kept me from hanging out like that much. I never really hung out anyhow. It was like, years ago, there was this thing called the groupies list, and they had like, it was online. It was like, all these groupies got together and they were rating all these like guys in bands that they, you know, had relations with, and comparing, you know, penis sizes and all this stuff. And it's just like, I never showed up in any of that because I never really dove into that realm that much. And I have no, that whole big party life people and that whole thing is like, I've always felt like either I don't fit in or I'm not judging them. It's just like all the spring breakers and all those people that go down and like, I could never do that. Like, I could never, you know, like be like topless, even as a male, like, and all that whole thing that goes on and on a boat party. But I'm like, what am I doing? Like, I feel weird. So that's just me, you know, whoever makes anybody happy is fine.
Well, congrats on your 10 years of sobriety, living life in your penance, as you mentioned. I like that expression very much.
Some people would say it's the spiritual life, but there's a book by Crowley, Aleister Crowley, who called like A Diary of Your Drug Fiend. And it's really about that. He's saying like, you know, like it's almost autobiographical where he is a heroin addict, blah, blah, blah. Because then it's like, now he's got to live the spiritual life, which is, you know, for him, you know, was climbing mountains and doing horrible things to himself or whatever, you know.
Or you just continue touring the world and making little children.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a... Touring is definitely another issue these days. You know, I mean, it's changed a lot, right?
It's extremely financially draining.
Exactly. I don't want to act like a cheap bastard, but yeah.
It's not what it used to be, for sure. Even as we're approaching a new cycle ourselves, we're being very careful about what we set our feet into.
Isn't it everything unbelievably expensive in Canada now, too? Like, it is in America?
Unbelievably expensive, yes.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah.
This is unbelievable. Like, we used to go, oh my God, we're going to Germany, and like, how are we going to afford to hang out, or like Scandinavia? And it's like, now I'm like, I'm fine going there. Like, everything's cheaper than here.
It's crazy.
I'm serious. Like, America, especially in New York, I mean, or LA, like, they're the most expensive places, I think, in the world now. It's like, it's ridiculous. Yeah.
What a world, Tommy. What a world. Take me to the soundtrack of your youth when you were growing up in your parents or guardians' house. What music was playing when you were not in control of the radio? What music did your parents or guardians listen to?
Well, I have four older siblings.
Nice.
Yeah, so my brother, he got me into a whole bunch of stuff. Like, he's like, as soon as he was into Cream.
Awesome.
Hendrix. Those are the two biggies. Rolling Stones.
Is that why they vetted you on the street, maybe? Because and brought you out drinking because you had the older siblings that knew that you your family was cool?
No, because my brother was considered, they were all a lot older than me. I was like really young. Like I was a mistake. So I came out a lot later. But that's a good question. But I guess because like I about around the age, I was obviously into music a lot. By seventh grade, I was growing my hair, and then I was listening to a plethora of stuff. But as a really young kid, like one of the first things I remember was like the Doors too, like hearing that on the radio. You know, my sisters were into like really folk music, maybe a folk rock. My father hated rock music.
Oh yeah.
Despised it. He said he called it jungle music. And he listened to like really like Broadway music and show tunes and stuff like Oklahoma and those that realm and West Side Story was into Perry Como and Bing Crosby. My mother wasn't really into that. She liked Mario Lanza and like Italian pop music or something, you know? So there's a lot of music going on. And then my sisters, I remember like we had a record player and it was like a Jackson 5 record in there and Herman's Hermits, Meet the Beatles. So as I was groomed to be a music freak. So the first record I bought was Bowie Space Oddity. So that was the first record I bought on my own.
Which is pretty sick. That's a nice starting point.
Yeah, we were like, that was the thing was like, you know, Glenn's from that time too, where, you know, like it was glam rock was like the thing, you know, like, so like we wanted, you know, like the Sweet and Bowie, and then, you know, but then it was also metal, was Sabbath and Deep Purple, and you know that stuff. That's what I really got into. As soon as I could find a Deep Purple shirt, I was wearing it constantly. So kids are like, oh, you know, Tommy's into this shit. So, you know, we had a Sabbath Paranoid record that we were handing around in the neighborhood that everyone got. You know, it was like, it was a different, it was so underground.
Yeah, completely different to nowadays where you like you share a file with one of your friends. You share a link. Check this out. You know, now, you had to be patient. You had to, there was much more like excitement when you actually got to hold it and put it on and bring it home. You know, like there's a whole process versus now.
Yeah, no, it was everything was, and then getting pictures of your idols. Like I had Ozzy. I got like a circus magazine and there was pictures of Ozzy in there. And I was like, what the hell, man? We were so like Ozzy and Tony Iommi, these pictures, these guys were like gods to us, you know, and Bowie too. So at different times, but yeah, no, I mean, I was exposed to a lot of music, man. It's like tons of it all the time.
You met your dad. Your dad wasn't into metal. Did he ever come around? Even, you know, you said, you know, signed to Epic, which is a fucking massive, massive record label. Did he ever come around?
He never really accepted it. It's unfortunate. You know, his old school, man. Like, he wanted me to be an engineer like him, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
oh, shit. Okay. What was that discussion? There's this moment of like, I'm going to be a musician, and he's like, no, you're going to go to school, and you're like, no, I'm not.
He was stern. He didn't carry a conversation too long.
Okay.
And it was like, I knew he was disapproving, and he left it at that. You know, he wasn't. He made it clear that he he was very much against me playing music, even as a hobby, really.
Wow.
Like he thought it was dangerous. A lot of things he said was right. I mean, it's true, you know, like a lot of the evils that come around in the music business is absolute garbage. So it's like, it's not a great business to be in. Like being an engineer and something that's, he's a mechanical engineer. Looking back, I'm not going to say my career has been a waste of time. You know, I think it has some benefits, but there's something about science and in engineering and the technical people that I admire a lot. And like later on in life, I'm like, he was, I mean, like doing something for society, even without any recognition for as a whole, is much more formidable or it's reputable than, being a rock musician, which is it's narcissistic in a way. So
a little bit, yeah, for sure. But that moment, that feeling on the crowd, is something that feeds us as humans. It might be a narcissistic thing, but
I think it goes back to like reincarnation. There's something, the art gods pick people. I was on this path. There's nothing you could do to stop it, because like this cloud that I used to live under, like this, the way I used to think, and like I didn't. I was just so unbelievably selfish all the time, and that helped my career. Like, I mean, that was like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to get this for me. Like, I don't give a shit about anybody else. I'm going to fucking, I'm going to make it, And that drive, who knows where that came from? It was just like, it's like some, like I say, something supernatural is like, this guy is, you're going to do this. And now I look back, I'm like, how did I freaking do that? Why did I do that? How could I be such an asshole? You know what I mean? Like, it was just like, I didn't care about anything else. It's like, so it's a weird thing, man. Everyone has their own destiny. Like, this fog of you constantly, so I can look at some musicians today, some guys I know, and when is it enough? Like, how much glory can you possibly receive before you're happy? Like, what is going on there? Like, I'm never going to mention any names, but some of these guys, it's like they have three successful bands and they're constantly on the road, and it's like it's never enough. That they have children they never see, and wives that they never hang out with, and like, they're constantly out there, and I'm like, in one way I'm jealous of them to have that kind of tunnel vision. On the other hand, I'm like it seems boring to me, like it just seems weird. So, whatever.
There's definitely the yin and yang of having a lifestyle of a balanced lifestyle, I'll call it that, of coming home and being a family man, doing what you need to do in the house to be a good father and to be present, and then going on tour and then coming back. I feel like there's more appreciation of both sides of the things, like if you do less touring, I find.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's true. It's, but I mean, you got to make a buck. So, I mean, it's like you were saying, it's hard these days to make a buck anyhow. So
we got to be thrifty.
Well, thrift, that's a big one. If I had to pick a couple of words, that would be, if I'm going to write a book or something, thrifts would have to be in there, because I tell these guys, you survived the music business. Dude, like, it's only in the last, like, maybe 7 or 8 years, for some reason, I've come to the realization that I was okay financially.
Because you're always terrified before that, or it's just
terrified. And
does that fall in once again? It's a beer thing, right? So I'm going to bring it back. And is it since you're sober, you're not spending a whole bunch of money on booze?
That could, maybe that has something to do with it. But before then, I was drinking. But I get most of my booze for free. Remember, I was in a band.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, working in clubs in New York City, I never paid. People would buy me drinks, or I would, you know, we'd close the doors at CBGB's at, you know, 5 in the morning. Yeah. You know? So, you know, and then I, you know, I would buy liquor for, if I really wanted, I get it from Hilly at cost, which was like, you know, a bottle of vodka was like $1 back then. So, like, I never. And then down on Lower East Side, there was a beer distributor strip right around the corner from us. And it was like, so everything was dirt cheap back then. And then, so in order to live like that, too, like, I never spent any money. Like, I would, like, if I had money, we'd go to the band. But we, like, I lived on rice and beans.
Yes.
And, like, tuna fish and shit like that for years and years and years.
Just putting all the money, like, into the band.
Yeah, but like we know, yeah, I mean, but that was the way it was. It's like the idea of, like, I mean, like we're saying when you're living in New York City, all these restaurants and all blah, blah, blah. It's like I never participated in any of that. Like I would, there was like this bum, like, deli across the street from CB's, and that's where I would eat for years. It was like a plate of rice and beans. It was like $1.50 or something. Well, that's what I eat.
Well, so what changed 7 years ago? What made you more thrifty?
I've always been really thrifty. No, I've always. That's what enabled me to survive. Like I see these guys like on the road, like spending money out there. I would save PDs all the time. Yes. I was like I would save. Like I would not spend money, you know, like Danzig money or anything like that. I wasn't spending. I got into this whole thing. I would hardly spend any money.
Smart.
So then one day I woke up and I was like, okay, like I'm not that bad. You know, I was like, I've saved a lot. So,
well, good for you. That's excellent advice for.
Yeah, no, you really got. I mean, from the age of 18 to 30, don't spend any money. Like, you know, if you have to live with your parents or a bunch of people, or just live like a fucking slob for 12 years, if you want to make it, and just like save everything, don't spend. Gear, go really minimal amount on. Don't spend that much money on gear either, because if you're good, you really don't.
You're gonna get endorsements anyways.
You get endorsements, but what do you need really? Yeah, you know, so don't go crazy with gear. Yeah, man, it's just like, you know, you got to really just tighten that. That's the thing with thrift is Spartan lifestyle is a great thing. But I've been gifted with that. That's like something that's God given. I mean, I can't. How did I figure that out? I don't know. Maybe it's just like Catholic upbringing. I don't know.
Take me back to your first shows, the first show that you ever went to go see, first live music experience.
Ooh, my brother and I, and his wife actually, we went. He was got married young. We went to see Black Oak, Arkansas. At the Academy of Music in New York. I think I was like 11.
Wow.
It was Black Oak, Arkansas, and JoJo Gunn. That was the concert.
Sorry, I was going to say, was it everything you imagined it to be? Those first shows can be overwhelming.
Oh, yeah, it was amazing. I mean, I was going to, as a teenager, I was going to a fair amount of concerts. Like, I had, like, another thing I want to say, I had a paper route. And when there used to be something called newspapers, and there was a thing called the Long Island Press, and it was in Queens. And I used to deliver that. And I saved. I never spent my, I mean, I had all my brother's clothes. So I never, you know, any allowance that I would get, you know, I would save. So, and ticket prices were ridiculously cheap back in the day. Yes. It's like, you know, baseball games.
It's not like now.
Tickets. It was fantastic. It was great. So, and then I went, you know, I got, you know, CBGB as a kid. By the time I was like 15, I was going there. So I saw the Ramones there.
Amazing.
I saw the Dead Boys.
Amazing.
The Damned. Talking Heads, Suicide, all those bands. I was into. And then I was into like some of the Long Island cover bands, which obviously was Twisted Sister was a Long Island cover band. And I went to see them. Zebra. You know, there was a lot going on, and it was hard to have fake IDs. I mean, New York didn't have your picture on the license. It was just a piece of paper. It was the driver's license, so it was easy to forge.
Very convenient for young.
Yeah, no one gave a
music
shit.
Music enthusiasts.
Yeah, no one cared.
How about your first time on stage? Do you remember your very first show?
I do. It's very foggy. And it was really horrible experience. I was in like as I don't even know if I really knew how to play yet. Like
you were just acting the part. I love it.
Yeah, we were fooling around. I was in this cover band, and I mean, we didn't have digital technology or anything like that back then. So the recording, I mean, I don't even know it. We were trying to play like Tall songs and Yes and shit. And I'm sure it was absolutely atrocious. And we played this place in Forest Hill, some bar. And it was like two people in there. That was like my first gig. And I was like,
That was not how you imagined it.
I was like 13 at the time.
Wow. That's cool. Yeah. Hey, what's up, Vox and Hopsheads? I just want to take a little moment about Cryptopsy's upcoming tours. That's right, I'm talking about the Scream of Perseverance tour and our headliner dates that coincide with that tour called As Summer Burns. The Scream of Perseverance tour is kicking off at the end of May and runs all the way until the end of June. We are supporting the mighty Death to All. We are going all over the United States, and we are hitting some of Canada. So excited to be honoring the legendary music of death alongside amazing musicians that performed on these albums. Even more stoked to be doing some headliner dates in some cities that I've actually never played in. If you are planning to come to any of these shows, you should definitely grab your tickets by going to voxandhops.com/summer, and you will be able to grab all of your tickets there. That's voxandhops.com/summer. Do it, people. Come hang out with me. Enjoy life, metal, and craft beer in your hometown. Come to a show. We're going to have a great time. Now, enough about all of that. Let's get back to the episode.
You did just do a tour in January with Life of Agony. You dropped a new single for that called Breaking Point via Napalm Records. Talk to me about the era of singles, the era of EPs, the era of not releasing albums, something that you've released many of. Talk to me about that. The albumless era, which I hope is coming back to the album era, personally. But talk to me about this.
Yeah, I mean, the guy from the label, we signed with Steamhammer, which is in Germany, and Napalm bought them out. And
I understand.
And they wanted to release a certain of those acts in America, and Prong being one of them, which I was flattered. And he's like, you know, Tommy, the record was like done like a long time ago. And I was like, you know, the record's going to be out. I think at that time he's like, we'll be out in, you know, like 14 months from now. And I was like, you know, Ollie, just do whatever you want to do. I do not care. Whatever's going on now, and I don't care, and just do what you want. Like, yeah, we have to release four singles. I'm like, yeah, I mean, which songs on there? Like, yeah, it's a Prong record. Like, no one knows what the hell it is to begin with. Like, who knows? It's like, I've been through the ringer on this whole thing. Like, being on a major label, you say like, oh, this should be the single, and oh, like, and they're always wrong. and no one knows jack shit about anything, what's going to be popular. So, like, you know, they figure it out, and they'll figure what the singles are, and it will probably be, later on they'll blame me. Like, they'll go like, you say, you know, well, Tommy said that should be the first single, and, like, you know, no one bought the album because he said that. It always would be something like that.
I did read that Epic dropped you after 3 weeks after one, the last Epic, which is fucking crazy.
Which was not, maybe that's a good example. Like, I was just like, they're like, yeah, we want like the title shot to be the first single. And I'm like, and then like no one agreed, like everyone, no one agreed on it. And they did it. And they was like, oh, no one's picking it up. So like, fuck prom. Like, you know, like, so it's like, that was it.
3 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, way to give a band a chance, you know?
Well, they did give us a big chance. I mean, granted,
it was the third record, or second record. I could be wrong.
It was fourth.
Okay.
Fourth, basically fifth, because they did like another release. So it was, they stuck with us long enough. Yeah, but no one knew what was going to happen with that. So I don't know. Now, I mean, no one buys, does people buy records? I have no idea.
People buy vinyls now, from what I'm hearing. People are into that. It takes a long time to press vinyls and get vinyls ready, which is why maybe that 14-month discussion you had mentioned before. So that could fall into that. From what I've heard, my experience, hopefully, it's getting a little better. So hopefully the vinyl production catches up with the amount of music that was written during the pandemic.
Yeah, no, I mean, if there's a market out there, I mean, like, the thing is, it's amazing to me is the R&B artists. I had a relationship with this guy that worked at Spotify, and he was actually my manager for a while. And he's like, oh, you know, the new Weekend, this German guy. He's like, the new Weekend single is coming out, and it came out yesterday, and they already have 1 billion plays. It's like, you know, stuff like that. And I'm like, why am I still doing this? Like, why can't I just, like, I almost do that anyhow. Like I just play the old prom songs. I'll just play it up to a bar. And like why do I try to go out there and compete? Especially like with the new metal bands, these guys play unbelievably and they're great. Like, why do I keep doing, like, trying to release new material and new records because they asked me to. And that's I had absolutely no plans to do it. It's like, they call me, it's like, oh, you want to make another record? I'm like, all right, yeah, sure. And then I get into it. Then I'm not going to sound like I mail it in. Once I'm like, I have too much pride, you know, like, I'm not going to, you know, I've made a couple of shitty, really awful records and that are embarrassing, so I don't want to do that again. Just mainly for my kids' sake. But yeah,
so have I. Don't worry. My first Cryptopsy record was not a well received record, so I understand.
Really?
Oh, horrible! we don't play any of that anymore or ever, except for that.
But
on
you
that
know
cycle.
What? There's probably be a resurgence of that. Oh, that record was amazing. You guys should play that.
There are 100% our people that were like, I was afraid to tell my friends that I listened to The Unspoken King. Definitely. Every show, people come up and say that. But where we, you know, it is what it is. So music for you, you've built a legacy with Prong. You've crafted your own identity. You guys never followed any trends. And you're continuing to do that now. So when you sit down to write something, it's just you that's coming out.
It's a lot to do with the guitar playing. Yeah, it's like whatever I'm into at that time. It's like, you know, I might have to add this, is that, like, when I was a kid, I did not play guitar. So, yes. Like, if any, like, you the and it's a great excuse because, these guitar wizardry has gone into another dimension.
John Petrucci's, those kids sit in their room for hours and hours, and that's all they do.
I didn't do that as a kid. Like, we formed a band from guys working at a rock club, right. And it was not... I played in a cover band as a bass player in high school, and I wasn't that good. So we sort of started a band, or sort of an art rock band, you know? But anyhow, on the Lower East Side. So I was saying, like, I did not, as I grow with guitar, the records sort of, and vocals, they sort of just represent that. It's like, that's just my tool in order to grow or to see where I'm at, really. I mean, like, it's some of the older records, I'm like, how the hell did I do that? Like, it's just so weird. But,
it's like a fluke that you figured something out and that's just it.
I got real inspired on this new record that's coming out. I was really inspired by my playing, and I just had a good time writing riffs. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, that's a cool riff, you know? And it's like, and some of that influence came from listening to going back, like listening to some of the great records that I think are fantastic, and like what makes that great. So I sort of took from that a little bit, you know, and then so I had a really good time. Like as far as writing goes, the stars were aligned, and it was amazing. It was an amazing experience. So I've made records where it's just the opposite, where like everything that could go wrong started from the beginning. Like, you know, there's a lot of problems. And this one was easy, you know, it was cool.
Fans, people listening are going to want to know, I know what this question is. It's a shitty question. I got to ask it. Can you tell when a new record's coming? Is that something you can talk about if you can't?
No, I can't. I'm not supposed to say.
I understand. Yeah. I've been saying that myself.
The whole scheme that you were talking about, the whole, like, you know, what they're doing. No, there's...
Cool.
Well, actually, it's not even an album. It's not even... It's like they were saying, like, oh, don't even say there's an album.
Well, Napalm will do a good job. I definitely agree with that. They know what they're doing. So, and listen to Tommy, people. Listen to Tommy at Napalm, please. He knows what's going on. I interviewed Andrew Thorpe King. He wrote a book called Failure Rules, where his life. He went through a lot of failures, but he ended up learning a bunch of great things from it. And I've been inspired by this book that he wrote, and I interviewed him about it, to know and ask my guests, what is the biggest failure that happened in your career, but you learned the biggest lesson from?
There's one, I think it was, the most hurtful thing was when we fired our original bass player, Mike Kirkland. I think that was the stupidest thing we did that I've done. And remember I was talking about that fog?
Yes, exactly. And that like the drive you were talking about.
Yeah. And it was like, you know, some idiot said that it would be better to have a younger, better looking guy with us, and that would help the band. So that sort of got like somebody that's a better performer or something. And that like, got with me like, well, we're not going to get famous with Mike, so we got to get this other guy. And it wound up, it went the other direction. Like this guy just, the guy that we got to replace the original guy, who was a great dude and did nothing wrong, but we listened to assholes, was that guy wind up being a huge thorn and like fucking things up even more. So, but that's not the only mistake. So yeah, it's just like, I know the story doesn't sound so strong, but inside I knew it was a bad mistake. It was a bad move. And it was just like something that was a very, very distasteful thing for me to live with for a really long time. So that was a bad mistake. But I mean, if you're batting, my batting average has got to be like 200. It's like, you know, like if you get one right out of three chances, that makes you a 330 hitter, 333. And I'm not anywhere near that. Like I was whining to my wife the other day. I'm like, I can't fucking do anything right, man. Like I was like, I can't make decisions are really difficult. Like, you know, there's a lot of hard decisions to make, and like now with cell phones are a pain in the ass too, because I can, like, somebody will call me and I'm not prepared for the conversation,
yes,
and I'll say the wrong thing, and I've done that recently, and you know, like losing my temper. And that's really bad. Like that's something that, and there's no way out of it. So that's those two things. Like she either don't pick up the phone. I learned, and I keep saying, well, having not a lot of sleep because I have a young baby in the house, and so it's hard. My fuse is short as it is, but I think one of the worst things to do in this business. or in any business or in life, is lose your temper. It's a terrible thing. There's nothing wrong with being angry. You can't be angry. Somehow, you can't try to take control of the situation.
Sometimes it says when you lose your temper, it's like your reasoning and rationale of what you're going to say is obscured.
Exactly.
And you'll say things that you would have never said, either
crazy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Totally, totally get that. And I totally get the guilt of firing a friend.
Yeah, that was a terrible thing. It was like, it's this weird shit that I've done in the past. Like, just like really, and I continue to do stuff. It's weird, but like I said, I just got to watch that's one of the reasons why being sober too is like, I got to watch my ass all the time. Like, I can't, who knows what the fuck I'm going to do, so that's just me,
Better to be more in control, which is a perfect
damaged person. So
hop off to my next big topic, which is mental health. I like to talk about mental health a lot in the past year on the podcast. I think it's important for our fans, people in general, to hear that we are not perfect individuals and that we struggle as well. So what do you do? There's been a lot of talk about thinking through the past, trying to see through that fog, living in your penance. What do you do when you're not feeling well? What is your tactic to get through the dark days?
Yeah, like I was talking to my wife today about that. She's just like, sometimes you're getting pretty dark these days. I'm like, yeah, because not sleeping. And then,
100%. Sleep deprivation is horrible.
It's terrible. It's terrible for somebody like me. And then I used to, when having kids too again, you have less time to do these things. But I was practicing for a long time. I was practicing TM. I was into transcendental meditation.
Very sick. So, yes.
Yeah. So that was one of my things, and I had stopped because I can't do it anymore. So that's a cool thing. There's another meditation technique that you're still going to look into your past. It's called Mal meditation. It's a Korean thing, and you're supposed to send all these. They say everything in your mind is false pictures, so you're supposed to just throw them in a hole in the wall, and like you sit there and suddenly it's like direct all your old thoughts, clear your mind, and keep thinking, throwing into that. I think that's a good technique too, but you got to get heavily involved in that one. That's like, that's a serious discipline. Working out, another thing I was doing like crazy, I was fucking doing that. Can't do that much now. When, and after the baby stops, I don't have to, maybe I can get back into that. Not a crazy workout, I was jogging. I was living in California for a long time, and it's easier out there because the weather's great all the time. Back 100%. Here on the East Coast, it's like, Jesus, it's raining again today. Like,
or it's freezing.
Like, I'm stuck in the house. It's like, it's walking, jogging, meditating. Those are good things.
Very good things. Move your body, work your mind. Don't get caught up in the negative vibes and find ways to make yourself just feel just an inch better. And then,
sober guys, a lot of them have a higher power, too, like whether it's God or, you're able to have like a guardian angel to talk to, or, your higher self. So, how would you rather be perceived? Like, you want to be, a raging maniac, angry, or do you want to be somebody that's calm? Somebody that's going to pass judgment on you. That's whether it's an imaginary friend or, some people say that, religious people have imaginary friends. Yeah, it is sort of like that. If it works, then, who cares really? It's like every time you turn around now, somebody's going off the deep end, like killing people committing suicide. It's terrible. I think in mental health, you're talking about anger and the dangers of anger, can lead to you killing somebody, including yourself. That's got to be stopped. So what do? You got to keep people from being angry somehow, or you can't get to that point. You know, like, anger has to be stopped somehow. But I think media...
Horrible. Social media is horrible.
Yeah, it's making people angry.
100%. I completely agree about that.
It's too much narcissism. Like, you know, like, it's, you know, like, if you have a happy life and you're successful, you know, why do you have to throw that in other people's faces? Like, why can't you just humbly be content with how you are and, you know, appreciate your life? Why do you have to make everyone else feel horrible that they're not where you are?
100%.
It doesn't make any, you know? So, and then, so it's a bad sentiment of all this, the show of how great you are via, you know, social media, or how great things are, or whatever.
I'm sure
insensitive to others.
That is true. And I'm sure that in the future, there'll be many research studies done on the effects of all of this on the generations that are just, you know, younger than us and that are growing throughout this.
So what's next? I mean, what are they going to do? Like, what are they, how are people going to relate to one another? It's, you know,
it's a scary question. Yeah. Not face to face, sadly. which is horrible. One last question, classic new sober wrap-up question. I'm doing this new segment called Fight the Hops, where I ask my guests a very small goal, something that they're hoping to achieve within the next month or so, something that you're working on right now. For myself, for you, I would suggest getting good sleep and having the baby sleep through the night so that you can sleep better. But what are you doing right now to fight the hops?
Oh, man. Right now, I'm really I'm trying. There's been some member changes in the band. I know you know this stuff, and I'm trying to. I feel like I'm teaching rock school right now, School of Rock, yes. And I'm just like trying to pummel these guys I got now into fighting shape, and I don't know if I'm successful yet. So that's one of my big projects is. And this move back to the East Coast is like opened up a whole other can of worms. So we'll see how good of a, you know, how much Jack Black I have in me.
I'm sure you have a lot. You've done it before. I'm stoked. I'm glad we connected, Tommy. Thank you so much for taking
thank
some
you,
time,
thank you very much,
having
man.
A chat with me, talking about your life, talking about music, talking about your sobriety, talking about hypothetical new prong music coming out in the future. I'm stoked about it all. I really appreciate you taking some time. Massive cheers to you.
Thank you, buddy. Appreciate it, man. Cheers.
Hey, thank you all so much for listening right to the end. You know that I love and appreciate that. Man, this was an awesome conversation. This was a conversation that I had a long time ago. a very long time ago. I recorded it, I want to say back in May. And when I told the publicist that Tommy had spoken about a new record, he sort of asked me to hang on. So I did. Shout out to you, John. If you're listening, thank you for hooking me up with all these amazing artists for so many years. I respect you, dude. So obviously I held on to the episode until the record was being talked about for real. Massive thanks for Tommy for hanging out with me. I'm excited for the new music. I'm excited for this new lineup, new era of Prong. I'm excited to see where it goes. I hope to see that you find a way to keep suffering through your penance and making life interesting, sober, and stronger. Massive cheers to you for opening up about all that. I really, really think that's awesome. Now, if you enjoyed this Vox and Hops episode, you should sign up to the Vox and Hops Total Podcast mailing list. You can do that on my website, voxandhops.com. That's voxandhops.com. And when you do that, you shall receive one email a week that contains all of the details of everything that has happened recently in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. You'll get to see which episodes I dropped recently. You'll get to see which episodes I have coming up. You'll also get to hear about any projects I have in the works before I announce them to the public. You will also get to hear about anything going on in the world of Cryptopsy, and there's a lot of stuff going on with Cryptopsy right now, so the mailing list will keep you up to date on that. You will also get to see which albums the Vox
Vox and Hops album review crew have reviewed recently, and you will get to see which albums Jerry Monk, Vox and Hops' metal architect, has added to the Brutal Awakenings playlist. If ever you're looking for new music to listen to, well, you should listen to the new Cryptopsy as Gamora Burns. Just kidding, but you should listen to it. Apart from that release, Jerry finds the best new releases and puts them all onto the Brutal Awakenings playlist for our listening pleasure. So check it out. It's available on both Apple Music and Spotify. There's always a lot of stuff going on in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal podcast, and I hate when you miss a single thing, so please do me a favor and sign up to the mailing list. The Vox and Hops Metal podcast is brought to you by Sound Talent Media and Evergreen Podcasts. I hope you have a killer rest of the week. I will be back next week with one episode on Tuesday with Mario Quintero of Spotlights. But until then, remember to enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. Cheers, Vox and Hops heads.
This is Krista Makes, guitarist and vocalist for Less Than Jake, and host of Krista Makes a Podcast, a songwriting podcast where every week I'm joined by an amazing guest to break down the writing, recording, and release of one iconic song from their career. In our giant evergreen back catalog of episodes, we've had rock legends such as Dee Snider and Huey Lewis, punk rock favorites like Mark Hoppus, Fat Mike, and Brett Gurewitz, and up-and-coming artists of today such as Liz Stokes of the Beths and Genesis Owusu. We've had guests from all genres and styles of music, and I guarantee that if you peruse our back catalog, you'll see several episodes that'll make you say, "Man, I gotta hear that." Whether you're a fan of music or a creator of music yourself, you'll take away a whole new appreciation for the songs you know and love. Krista Makes a Podcast is available for free on all the places you could possibly listen to podcasts, and new episodes come out every Monday.